Aloha, boys and girls. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 73. This episode is brought to you by Horror in Clay. Collectors of horror-themed art with a tropical twist will already be familiar with the artistic work and madcap visions of Jonathan M. Chaffin of Horror in Clay, maker of fine horror-themed tiki mugs, art, and ephemera. You may already know his Cthulhu mug, Cask of Amontillado, or Dreadful Ape mug. But now, somewhere in the infinite multiverse or just on the other side of this shadow, the king in yellow awaits. The Pallid Mask, an 8-inch tiki mug inspired by the linked short stories of Robert Chambers and H.P. Lovecraft. Now available on Kickstarter and shipping in August. Search for Pallid Mask on Kickstarter.com or stop by horrorinclay.com. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum. Since 1854, Tandawai Distillers has been producing quality rum from the Philippines. The indisputable history of their Philippine rum is the foundation of which the Tandawai legacy continues today. Tandawai Asian Rum is made with premium varieties of heirloom sugarcane grown in the Visayas region of the tropical island of the Philippines. It is the same Southeast Asian vintage canes that has been cultivated for centuries in the tropical maritime climate and rich Philippine soil, which makes Tandawai Asian Rum distinctly Filipino. Tandawai Rum also has lots of history in the tropical exotic cocktail era when it first began with Don the Beachcomber and his Filipino barmen in the 1930s. There's evidence that these legendary bartenders created some of the first tropical cocktail recipes using Tandawai Rum. For more information, go to TandawaiUSA.com or stop by Tandawai USA's Facebook page. This podcast is also sponsored by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits. Or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crested mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit RoyalHawaiianLB.com. Today we make a visit to the Mauka Lanai, located in a secret location in the hills of Sierra Madre and loosely translated as Mountain Terrace. The Mauka Lanai is the home tiki space of Dave Anderson. And joining Dave and I for this recording is Alan Escalante. We chatted over a couple of drinks for another fun hangout episode filled with drunken bar talk. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the podcast. It's free and it will make it easier for you to enjoy future episodes as they are delivered to you automatically. Shares on your social media pages are always appreciated, and if you'd like to support the show, please stop by DesertOasisRoom.com and click on the donate button. Every donation, no matter the size, helps keep this podcast coming to you every week. Alrighty then, here's my conversation with Dave and Alan, coming to you from the Mauka Lanai.
Inside the Desert Oasis Room.
When was the last time you were here? I'm trying to remember.
You know,
it's been a while.
Yeah, it's a couple months.
Okay,
I would say maybe 5 or 6 months.
It's been a good long time.
I don't remember what my favorite drinks were on this menu. I haven't had everything.
No, there's a lot of new drinks on there compared to what.
But I've had some good ones.
Yeah. Little Grass Shack.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. You remember that one, right?
Yes, I do. That was.
Now, what's the difference between a Cobra's Fang and a Sidewinder's Fang?
I don't know.
Okay, so I don't know off the top of my head. I know that we could Google that, but we're not going to do that. So.
It's probably the difference between a space pilot and a jet pilot and a test pilot. You know, it's some marginal difference that somebody did to make it their own.
Okay, so I like on your menu you have a drink called the Dirty Marianne,
mm-hmm.
and the description is rum with gin and passion fruit, kind of sweet but a little slutty. So that one I got to try. So I want to have a Dirty Marianne. I have had it before, but I don't remember the flavor of that, unless it was the slutty ginger that I had.
Well, the slutty ginger kind of gives itself away. In that
which is two rums with gin and ginger make this one less sweet and more slutty.
Oh, wait a second. Before you do the Dirty Marianne, I think I'm going to ask for the sandpan because there's fashionola in that.
Okay, yeah.
Do you have fashionola?
I do.
Okay, you do. Okay, do you make your own fashionola?
I do.
Okay, awesome.
Ooh.
So, you know, that's a classic tiki ingredient that, you know, it's still not something that's very common. I mean, you can't just walk into, you know...
No, you can't.
High Times or BevMo or Mission Liquor and find it. You know,
yeah.
So there are people that are still making it. Tiki T makes fashionola, but they do it a little bit different than I think.
Oh, do they make their own?
Yeah, they do make their own.
They make their own of almost everything, though, too, don't they?
Almost all their syrups, they make their own. And Mike had me, Mikey Jr., he had me try a little sample of it, and it was way different than what I expected it to taste like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does not taste like traditional
fashionola.
I tried
it, too. We were both trying it the same day because that was when you started doing the blood punch.
Right. And then I was comparing flavors and all that. Yeah, so I think that there's a little bit of fuckery going on his fashionola.
Yes. Well, you know, artistic interpretation.
Yeah, that's a good way to let that one... that one be acceptable, right?
Yes.
How did you come up the names for these drinks?
You know, all of them took a long time to come up with. So by the time I finally came up with the Eureka version, I was usually pretty drunk. So I don't know. Some of them kind of lent themselves to something. Sometimes I'd give it to somebody and say, "What do you think that's like?" And let them spiel off a couple
ideas.
That
tastes like a slutty ginger to me.
Well, with that, I had the ginger drink already. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to have a ginger drink, I got to have a Marianne drink.
Right.
And so that was those two had to go together.
Right, right.
But it seems like everybody gets a slutty ginger and hardly anybody gets a Dirty Marianne anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not like they've ever had it, you know.
So the difference is that there's just an extra rum in the slutty ginger, right?
No, there's a big difference. It's very, very different.
Oh, okay. Because now that I'm looking at the menu, okay. So the Marianne has rum with gin and passion fruit. The slutty ginger has two rums with gin and ginger.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I like passion fruit. You know what I think is weird is I don't see much passion fruit in the United States. Like when I went to Puerto Rico, there's passion fruit everywhere.
Yeah.
But here, it's not as common.
Mm-hmm. That's
which
true.
Which kind of blows me away, you know?
I like it a lot. Okay, there's the sampan.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have an interesting bit of trivia for you. Did you know that Cleopatra is closer in time to the moon landing than she was to the pyramids being constructed?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
when you put it that way,
around the block a couple of times, it's pretty wild. But knowing how old the pyramids are, knowing how old they think the pyramids are,
right,
leaving out the Great Pyramid because they don't, there's all kinds of speculation about the Great Pyramid being,
really, tell me about
being
that
much older.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
By how much? Thousands of years?
Yeah.
That much?
Yeah.
So they created the other pyramids because of the Great Pyramid.
That's the theory.
Oh, see, I'm not an Egyptologist or a fan of that.
The Great Pyramid is lined up so perfectly. It's not perfect, but it's a lot closer than either of the other ones.
Mm.
And so the way that it looked when they started rifling the stone off it and everything, it was perfectly smooth and it was all gorgeous and beautiful, and the way that it's built inside is very different than the other ones.
So I know that the Sphinx came way later also.
Yes.
But there's also the way that it's lined up to the Great Pyramid, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there's some kind of connection to that they think, but they're not really 100% sure.
Yeah.
And based on looking at the Sphinx profile, they think that the head was something else before when it was built, because the head that's on it today is smaller in scale than the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Egyptians did that a lot. They would, you know, they'd have statues of Ramses the First, and by the time Ramses Fifth comes around, they'd say, well, you know, let's make it look like this one. So they would change the details on the face.
How do you know so much about all Egyptology?
I just was curious when I was a kid and
okay.
looked up all these crazy books. That's when I was when I was looking at that's when I got into reading about Thor Heyerdahl and
have you been there?
No.
Have you been to the exhibit?
No.
They have one coming.
Oh, is it the King Tut one or mm-hmm. the okay?
Yeah, yeah. So what's crazy to me is the stuff that you're going to see in that exhibit are thousands of years old.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I haven't seen it yet, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it, but that's a mindfuck beyond all mindfucks. Well, not beyond all of them, but it's a mindfuck to me because, like, if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about how long ago that was, and think of all the hundreds of generations that passed since then.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you kind of compare when they were at their peak and when China was really kicking ass too. Europe was a bunch of guys in mud huts, you know, wiping filth on each other. It was
right.
It was there wasn't any kind of a civilization there in the you know Western European area. They were you know just tribal chiefs and crazy people with blue paint on them.
Yeah. There's some crazy stuff, too, with China with the walls, right?
Yeah.
The Great Wall. And then there's supposedly a city underground.
I haven't heard about that.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't heard about
so
that.
You know
I know they dug up a lot of stuff underground.
You know the Terracotta Warriors?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Supposedly that army that was made for the general that passed away,
mm-hmm.
right? Supposedly, there's a city made for that general, and that's where he went.
Oh,
that's
really?
That's why that army was underground.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay.
And they had, like, some kind of affinity for mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said that this underground city, it had rivers of mercury, right?
Wow.
And that area where they think they may have found the city, there's a giant mountain there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they tested the soil for mercury, and it has an unusually high levels of mercury in the soil.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Now, didn't they stop exploring that area? Didn't the government say something?
I don't know.
I heard something like that. They actually
really?
Stopped, yeah, because they didn't want it to... I don't know, maybe just keep it the way it is and not destroy any more of, you know...
Yeah, when they first stumbled on the warriors, they broke up a few.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You know, going back to the pyramids, most of the tombs, by the time they were found,
mm-hmm.
had been pilfered.
Yeah.
And the only reason why the King Tut tomb is so celebrated is that it was still intact.
Yeah. It's the only one that they've found that wasn't broken into.
Now...
As far as I know,
King Tut was supposedly like an insignificant leader.
Mm-hmm.
That he wasn't like Ramses or any of the other
no.
big ones, right?
No.
That they said that he was so insignificant that the reason why they think that his tomb was not pilfered was because of that. That, you know, they probably didn't think that there was much to see and there was much to take in there because he had less of, you know, kind of. Historical value, for lack of a better term. So,
well, it could be that, or it could just be that they just didn't find it. I mean, if
that could be too.
If they, I mean, the idea was that everybody that worked on the tomb ended up getting killed. You know,
but if you think about this, right? If he was an insignificant leader
mm-hmm.
compared to some of the other bigger ones, right?
Yeah.
Imagine what their teams must have looked like.
Well,
the other ones were more celebrated, right?
Yeah. But they're more celebrated in history. They're not more celebrated at the time.
Oh, we don't know that.
Well, you don't know the other way either. I mean, you don't know that.
Oh, that's, yeah, I'm speculating,
you know what
of
I mean?
Course. Yeah.
Because you don't... you don't find the significance of a leader until you look back over a period of time to really be able to judge.
Wasn't the other strange thing that once they found the pyramid of a certain leader,
yeah,
they weren't buried there. They were buried somewhere else.
I thought that was their tomb. The pyramid was their tomb.
That's what I thought too, but they didn't find their body there. They found their body somewhere else.
They found the sarcophagus in the tomb, so the body was originally in the tomb. But in the time it took to have the tomb be robbed and everything else,
the body was removed.
They would take the body away and put it someplace else and rehide it.
Okay.
And that was why they started using the Valley of the Kings instead of building pyramids, because pyramids just said, "Hey, look at this!
Right?
Check it out. There's a lot of good stuff
in here." There's good stuff in here.
Yeah. Okay. That's.
Of course, you'd think they'd have things like the old guards and you know.
Well, but they have all these curses, folklore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
About, you know, magical things that happen.
Yeah.
Like if you break into a pyramid, and you know. I don't know how much of that is, you know, if that just comes from folklore, if they spread that around so that people wouldn't break in and try to scare people away.
They have very specific curses that were on, and their belief in the afterlife and that kind of thing was very,
very strong.
Very strenuous, would tell you, yes, Boris Karloff is going to come and kill you if you do this.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know how many of them held to any of that, you know, I mean, really. They go through the motions of what they've got to do to get through daily life, but, you know, when you get down to the really hardcore believers, it's usually a pretty small percentage of people that are, you know.
Yeah, yeah, there's always going to be skeptics.
Yeah.
There's always going to be people, even back then, there's got to be people that were like, oh, no, none of this is real.
Yeah.
You know, like once they close that final stone,
yeah.
I'm coming back.
Yeah.
And I'm getting all my stuff, or I'm getting all his stuff.
Yeah. And then they do, and, well, I don't know if Boris Karloff came and went and got him, but, you know.
So, did you hear my podcast about my new cat?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got a new cat?
Yep.
I got two new ones.
Oh, wow. Do you still have the...
Allie passed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you.
That was why. It was the...
She lived to be 22 years old, but she died of cancer.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did you guys find out that she...
Yeah, we put her down.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
We knew that she had cancer for quite a while, and she was living with it, you know, and the vet was like, you know... There was a big growth on her, between her shoulder blades, like on her back. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, it's in a place where it's like stretched out over her spine. So he said, you know, I can remove it, but there's two things that'll happen if I do. One of two things that could happen. One is I'll either get it all out and then damage her spine doing so, or I will be cautious about her spine and probably not get everything out. Because of where it is, you know. So he said, she's 22 years old. She lived a long life. If she were my cat, I would just keep her comfortable until the day comes to put her down.
Yeah.
And we knew that was going to happen. So we, we did that. We kept her comfortable as long as we could. And then when the day came, we knew, like, we could see it in her face that it was time to put her down. You know, like, they say that when it's time, you'll know. Because we did that with our last cat. And I said, how am I going to know that the time is, you know, when the time is right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you'll know. And so, same thing, she had cancer too. She lived to be 18 years old. And she died of stomach cancer. And we put her down, like the day that we put her down, just I came downstairs and looked at her and looked at her face. And she looked like she was suffering, you know.
Oh,
so I thought,
Jesus.
Today's the day. So we brought her in and we put her down. And... So we got two new cats, right? We went to the shelter one day, and Steph fell in love with one. I fell in love with the other, so we took both of them home. And
both male, both female?
One boy and one girl.
Okay.
We're still working on assimilating them because they just want to jump on each other and just, you know, they want to play. But the boy is a month older, and at that age, he's a lot bigger. And he's more aggressive. He's got a very outgoing personality, you know, and... The other one is the other one's very reserved, very shy. She was a feral cat, We believe that she was born to a stray because she was really tiny when she was brought to the shelter.
Uh-huh.
And she was very, very skittish. She was scared of every little noise. And, you know, she's getting better every day, right?
Yeah.
But because of that, and then the other one is just like so, you know, so outgoing and so, you know...
In your face, how you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So in your face. Everything's
a toy. Why aren't you playing with me now?
Yeah. When he sees her, he just wants to jump on her and bite, 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 scratch, 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 and roll around on the floor with her. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so we're giving them community time little by little, but we're keeping separated right now. You know, they take turns with the run of the house, and then who's ever in the house, the other one is in one of the bedrooms. You know, so... So anyway, you know... I find it interesting, you know, these cats, they take over your life. So
I can imagine. Yeah.
I had a cat once when I was younger, when I think I was about 11 or 12 at the time. She lived to be 17 years old. My mom brought her home from work one day. Somebody came into the office with a litter of kittens, and she took one of them. That's where that cat came from.
Oh.
The cat was 8 weeks old, and she lived to be 17 by the time that she passed.
Wow.
Right. And then... Stephanie had these other two that she brought with her when we got together. One lived to be 18, and then Allie, which we just put down a couple months ago, lived to be 22, right?
Oh, man, I love that cat.
And so now we got some... I know, thanks. So now we've got some new ones. I know, she was cool.
Yeah.
They're like little kids, man. They go into my daughter's room and they grab toys, like the stuffed animals, and they bring it downstairs and they play with it and stuff, and I gotta take it away from them and put it back upstairs, then they'll pick out another one.
Oh, I'm sorry, how old are they right now? Like a couple months?
So now one is 4 months and one is 5 months.
Oh, okay.
So the boy's five months and the girl's 4 months.
So they're still tiny.
Yeah, they're still kittens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's normal. They're playful right now.
And I think you told me a story that you had a cat here.
Yeah.
That was...
When I was living in South Pasadena,
wasn't at this house?
No.
Okay.
No, I was in South Pasadena, and I was in a house that was this great big fourplex, old house. There are pictures of that house there from 1910.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I was living there, and the rent was cheap. I had been living around the corner... down the street a ways in this place that looked like a Motel 6, you know, the kind of building that just like...
Right.
So uninspiring. It's
right,
just...
Right, it's just a box.
Oh, God.
It's just there.
It was horrible. And I used to meet my friends for breakfast over at the Salt Shaker.
Okay.
And so I'd walk around the corner and walk over to the Salt Shaker. And every time we'd meet for breakfast, I'd walk by this old house... And I think, I just got to keep my eyes open.
Uh-huh.
When one of those opens up, I'm gonna snag it. And it took probably 4 years, but finally one of the apartments opened up, and I was all over that like a wet coat. And the rent was $500 month for a one bedroom.
Yeah,
and it had a really nice big living area, kind of a front room, and then a sort of a dining area, and then a little bedroom and a little bathroom and a galley kitchen that was smaller than my bar now.
Yeah.
So, and a little back room in the back for that had a washer hookup. It didn't have any place to hook up a dryer, but it had a washer hookup. So one day I'm sitting there in my new apartment and I'm watching TV, and I hear this tiny, tiny cat yelling on the back steps.
Was it a kitten?
It was a tiny kitten.
Oh.
It was like she was so little, her eyes had just barely opened.
Oh.
And she was right out back, right under the door, yelling.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, what the hell is this?
She also must have been born to a stray.
Yeah.
And wandered off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And she came to my house, and I don't know how she got up on the step, because the steps were the kind that have the steel I-beams on the side.
Yeah.
And then the flat cement pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're totally separate from each other. I mean, she would have had to climb up that I-beam to get up to where the step
was. That's crazy.
And it's not like it was really high, you know.
But the gaps between the concrete slats were
crazy.
Yeah.
They were much bigger than her. I mean, she was like that big. I mean, she was like maybe 6 inches long, if that, including her tail. So I open up the door and here's this tiny calico cat who obviously has just barely opened her eyes and she barely has any teeth, and she's yelling at me.
Yeah.
As soon as I open the door, she's just focused on me and she's yelling at me because it's all my fault.
She probably smelled some food or something, right?
I'm allergic to cats, and I'm like, oh no. I've had strays show up at my house before. When I lived in Pasadena, I had a stray come around that was pregnant. Dear God, what a mess that was.
Wow.
Jeez.
But you know, I've been the guy in the room that the cats all know that I'm allergic, so they all come up to me and sit on my lap.
Right, right.
And they all rub themselves all over my face and everything. It's oh, we love you. Yeah, right. Anyway, I went to the pet store and I got some of the gruely stuff that you mix up and feed it to her with a little tiny turkey baster kind of thing.
Yeah, like a dropper, yeah.
And I fed her, and after a couple of days, I thought, okay, well, she's strong enough now. We're gonna go outside. I'd kept her locked up. I didn't let her into the bedroom. I didn't let her into the rest of the apartment. She was in the kitchen, and she was in that little back room. And that was it. Because I was hard and fast. There is no way that I'm going to let this cat be in my house. Damn it. I'm allergic, damn it. Don't you get it? So I put her outside on the step, you know, just right where I found her, and then one day, and I went to work. And all day at work, I'm thinking of this little foofy-headed cat.
Right.
Sitting on that step.
Right.
And I'm, oh, God. What if I come back and she's not there?
Right.
I'm like, oh no, what am I gonna do?
You got attached.
So here I am already in love with this stupid thing. And I get home and she's gone, of course. And the lady upstairs shouts out the window and says, "Hey Dave, we got your cat up here."
Oh, geez.
So she had like three cats herself.
Right.
And so she had...
That cat was probably waiting outside your door all day.
Yeah.
And so she took her in to make sure she was going to be okay.
She said she was sitting out there yelling again.
Yeah, see.
And so she came and got her. And the other cats apparently showed her how to use a litter box and everything, because after that she used the litter box fine.
Right.
Oh.
She, you know, it was like there was no training involved with anything at all with her.
You know what? Cats are instinctual about that. So we got these two cats,
yeah,
and they already knew how to use the litter box. But we also got them from the shelter where they use a litter box there. But when I got that other cat when I was like 11 or 12, mm-hmm. she was 8 weeks old, and I remember asking somebody, well, how do I teach her how to use a litter box? They said, just put her in the litter box and she'll know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I said, really? They said, yeah. So I dropped her in the litter box, she sniffed around, took a poop, and then from that point on, like...
Nice.
There's no housebreaking with cats, you know. Like you drop them in a litter box, and they're like, "Oh, is this where I poop?" So,
well, I happen to know it works because as I was growing up, that back corner of the yard over there, my parents gave me the choice of having either a fort, or a sandbox.
Oh, jeez.
You picked the sandbox.
I was five, so I picked the sandbox. Had I been six or seven, I think I would have picked the fort, or had I known what was going to happen to the sandbox,
right?
Because at that time, still, there were feral cats all over the place.
Yeah.
You never see them anymore here in Sierra Madre.
Well, you live near the mountains.
Yeah.
There's wild animals that come down.
Then there were a lot of cats around.
Okay.
There really were, but now there's nothing. But
So what happened to this calico? Yeah, yeah.
The calico named her Scarlet because she was very Scarlet O'Hara-like. I mean, she'd go around the house on my shoulders like a stole.
Yeah.
You know, I'd cook dinner and stuff like
that. So you kept her?
Yeah.
You kept her?
I didn't have any choice.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't going anywhere.
No.
She wanted to stay. That was her home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, after a bit, my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife later, she finally talked me into letting her into the rest of the house. And
yeah, she wanted her to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that was. God, I'm trying to think how old she was when she passed. I mean, that was, I want to say that was 1990.
And so you had her for a long time.
And she passed in 2008.
18 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
What about your sinuses?
The allergy?
Your allergies. I mean, do you still have those allergies now?
Yes. But it's something that with her, I'd wash my hands and I'd be careful and stuff like that.
Okay.
She wasn't. I got used to her.
Stephanie's allergic to cats.
Oh.
And she's had cats her whole life. Mm-hmm. And the two cats we have today that we just brought home from the shelter, she said, I'm more allergic to Lily than I am to Ferris. Like when she's around Ferris, that she has less of a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But when Lily comes around. She's like, yeah, like she feels
you can,
it. More.
You can acclimate to different cats, and different cats to me are like I have when there's a Siamese cat. If there's been a Siamese cat in the room the last week, I know it.
You know, well, Siamese cats are long-haired cats, so they're.
I think you're thinking of Burmese. Burmese are really long-haired.
Burmese, okay.
And Burmese are even worse, but Siamese cats for me in particular. Are the first cats I ever played with.
Aren't Siamese, like, super fluffy?
No.
They're very short hair.
Oh, okay. So I'm thinking of Burmese.
Have those eyes like Cleopatra kind of look.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I used to, when I was a kid, we'd go over to my godmother's house, and she and her husband had two Siamese cats. And I'd play with them, and we'd be rolling around and this and that, and scratching and back and forth and everything. And that went on for a long time. I mean, years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, one time, I'm in
you
the
just
car,
realize
and
that
we're
you're...
driving home, and I'm swelling up like a balloon.
Yeah.
All the scratches on my arm just start popping up and everything.
Yeah.
And
Jesus.
So it's almost like I developed.
So
the allergy.
Here's that same thing happened to me.
Oh, really?
With not with cats.
Yeah.
But with shrimp.
Oh, wow.
So...
Who was shrimp?
I love shrimp. Seafood.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I love shrimp. I love shrimp.
I thought it was another pet named shrimp. Yes, I know. I'm sorry.
You know, one day I just noticed that, God, how come I've been getting... I get puffy, like my eyes swell up, my mm-hmm. fingers swell up. I get these red splotches on my chest and my face and I itch. And for like a year, I couldn't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So I thought... Okay, I got to figure out what this thing is, right? Because it would only last for maybe an hour, and then it would go away, right? So I started trying to pay attention to when that would happen. What did I do, right?
Yeah.
I did this, and I did that, and I didn't know if it was like an animal allergy or whatever, and then I started to put two and two together, and like every time that was happening was when I was eating shrimp.
Wow.
So then...
Does it happen with other shellfish for you, or
no,
is it
just shrimp?
Huh.
So... I thought, okay, so let me see if it's really what I think it is. And I love shrimp. So then I would go eat shrimp, you know, and then I'd...
You know, you will freak me out every time you eat shrimp.
Oh, I do?
Yes, you do.
Because you know this?
You told me you were allergic to shrimp. And every time when we go out to eat...
Right.
It's like, what are you doing?
I love shrimp.
You're allergic to that. Why are you going to have that?
Here's the
What's
thing?
Wrong with you?
Here's the thing is that it's a discomfort for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But... It doesn't come on. The symptoms don't come on until maybe an hour after I've eaten, and then they only last for no longer than an hour, maybe 45 minutes. You know, and I just love shrimp so much. I can't give up shrimp for discomfort. For 45 minutes of discomfort.
Do you get it with like crawfish or?
I don't know because we don't have a lot of crawfish in California, so I don't know about crawfish.
Well,
if you
go to a crab boil place or someplace like that.
But it's not like. You can use there's shrimp everywhere, right?
Yeah.
There's shrimp more than crawfish, right? So, so I don't know. I have to find out. But, like I said, I just love shrimp too much that, you know, I'm not going to give up eating shrimp just for 45 minutes of discomfort. You know, like I'll deal with the discomfort to enjoy the shrimp. Right. And,
well, so long as it doesn't get worse.
No, it hasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, because like I know that some people like it if the swelling happens in your throat, right? You can stop breathing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen to me, you know. I think that just I'm aging, my body just doesn't tolerate the things that I shouldn't be eating as much as it used to.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening, you know. So
every time freak me out every time.
Thanks, Alan.
Any.
Thank you. But asshole. I mean, sorry.
Every time. And I'll tell him, dude, are you sure?
But as far as I know, that's the only food allergy that I have.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had other food allergies, thank God, because like, I can't imagine not being able to just eat what I want to eat, you know?
I had a reaction to strawberries once when I was a kid. But I had eaten probably more strawberries than would fit in a tow truck. I mean, I'd eaten a lot of strawberries. It was like crazy.
So your body was basically saying enough.
Yeah, I was just saying, dude.
It's enough.
Really?
But, can you eat strawberries now?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with them.
Do you think that you can build a tolerance towards something that you are allergic to or that?
Well, supposedly that's, I mean, I went to an allergist for a long time when I was a kid, and really what the allergist did was he would give me a shot every week that was a little bit of the essence of all the stuff I was supposedly allergic to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And that was supposed to make me get over all
your
these
body
allergies.
Starts building this tolerance,
but of course, you know, you go to an allergist and they're looking for what you're allergic to. They're going to find a lot of things you're allergic to. So they found, you know, there's only one kind of grass that grows in one part of Northern California on the coast that I'm not allergic to. I'm allergic to all cows and I'm allergic to dogs and I'm allergic to. I mean, it's this huge list of stuff that I've never had a problem with. You're
right.
Kidding? It's like, I mean, you know, you run around in the grass in the summer when you're a kid, and you get a runny nose when you come inside. What the hell is that? That's not you know, debilitating
or
anything.
What's the deal with all the kids that have peanut allergies today?
Where did all
these kids come from, right?
I don't know.
Because when I was a kid, that was never, ever, ever an allergy.
No.
But now when you go places, there are actually signs that say, we have peanuts in
our
food.
They have to. You got to be careful. I mean, that's
yeah.
That kind of an allergy is,
but
like,
what happened?
Is like, end it all. I don't know. What happened with autism? Why do we have autism all the time now when we never did? I mean, it was a one in a million chance that somebody would come up with autism when I was a kid.
So the only, well, I wouldn't say the only rational or the only logical explanation, but the obvious explanation to me is maybe we are pumping our foods with something that's causing all this stuff.
That could
right?
be.
Because,
that could be.
You know, obviously the kids today, they look like adults. They're
yes.
You know,
puberty
the 15 and 16 year olds today don't look like they did when we were 15 and 16 year olds.
No. But
and they're bigger. The kids are bigger today. But,
yes,
but
that's
humans
true.
Are getting bigger because
humans are getting bigger all the way across.
All the way across. Because the sizes in clothes today, like a men's medium today, was a men's large back in the 70s.
Yeah.
There wasn't no tall or big or no.
Well, that was clothing, I mean, size. There were people that needed clothes for tall and big.
But it
wasn't
you
as common.
Hear it like you hear it now.
But. It wasn't as common.
Yeah.
Well, they're pumping steroids into our meat, right? So they're fattening the cows and they're fattening the chickens. And so
and
we're eating all that, whatever they're injecting into those animals. Oh, so that's like I said, that's the obvious answer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, I don't know, man. I mean, like,
for God's sake, peanut butter is awesome.
I love
yes,
peanut butter.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
How can it? Maybe it's just the way they grow now, obviously.
Have you ever had a peanut butter and banana sandwich?
Peanut butter and banana sandwich?
Yes.
So, that's an Elvis sandwich.
I like the peanut butter and apple better. It doesn't have to be a sandwich. I just like peanut butter and apple.
I haven't tried that. When I was a kid, I used to put peanut butter and celery right down the channel.
I love that.
That was good. Yeah. So when
I
was
had it with banana, that one that you mentioned.
When my son was younger, I'd make him an Elvis sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bad, right? So Elvis would have a peanut butter and banana sandwich. And this is how I would do it. I'd butter the outside of the sandwich, and then I'd put it on a frying pan like a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
It would melt the peanut butter and the bananas together, and it would fuse the whole thing into this ooey-gooey thing that really was...
Oh, it's really good. It's really good. Tasty.
But it's super bad with all the sugar and all the carbs and all the fat. It's like so bad. Apparently, that's what he would order all the time when he went to a specific restaurant, and that's how he gained all that weight. Now, you know what a Luther Burger is.
It certainly helped.
Right? You know what a Luther Burger is,
no,
right?
No.
So, Luther Burger is a Krispy Kreme donut used as a bun for a cheeseburger.
Oh, hell.
And they call it a Luther Burger because there was a restaurant that used to custom make this sandwich for Luther Vandross. And that was what.
Huh.
Yeah, they named it after him. And that was what he used to order all the time. That he would order this cheeseburger made with a Krispy Kreme donut. And
God,
you can look it up.
Geez.
You can look up Luther Burger on Google and go to images, and you'll see. Yeah, it's
pretty nuts.
It's pretty crazy. Nuts. So it sounds like so savory, right? The whole sweet and salty, and it's gotta be like super rich.
It's good, but it's like it's like why?
Why? Well,
you don't have to. You don't have. Well,
but
it would be something for once in a blue moon.
People are raising their game and whatever it is that they make nowadays, right? Yeah. So, you know, there was the time when you would go into a donut shop and it was just sprinkled donuts.
Yeah.
But now there are donut shops that will put cereal on their donuts and bacon, and they'll top it with all kinds of weird stuff, marshmallows, and then they'll stuff it with all kinds of weird stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Voodoo Donuts.
That's exactly who I'm talking about. Yeah. But they're not the only ones to do that. Yeah. There are shops all over the place that do
that
now.
That actor Danny Trejo?
Danny Trejo.
I never had his donuts, but I heard they were awesome.
The Donut Man over in Glendora.
Oh, Donut Man's pretty awesome.
Has been doing stuff like that for a long
time. Yeah.
But they do like a... they have this stuff, this strawberry stuff that it's what they used to do for the fresh strawberry pie at
Marie Callender's. So the first
it's a bunch of fresh strawberries,
yeah,
with a bunch of red slop all over it.
Wow,
and it's the glaze.
Oh my God, it's like
so. The first time that I had that strawberry donut, it tasted like a Marie Callender's strawberry pie.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It tastes exactly the same. Now, Hugh Hauser did an episode on that guy.
I remember.
And he showed him his whole operation. He makes these tiger tails, right, that he does with devil's food. So it's the same, I guess the same stuff you use for a glazed donut. Mm-hmm. But then he also rolls it with a stripe of devil's food mix. Mm-hmm. Well, and then he does a twist.
It's a cake chocolate donut that's made out of devil's food. And then you have the raised donut that would be a regular glazed donut or a regular twist. And he puts those together.
And he rolls them together.
Oh, my God.
And then he twists them, and then he glazes that.
Yeah.
And then that's a tiger tail. So I have a confession to make, because there are times, they're open 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And there are times when I'm driving home and I'm going that direction.
Oh, wow.
And I think, I'm going to go that direction on the way home tonight. And I think to myself, they're open right now.
There you go.
And the thing is, you got to hit them later on at night, because during the day, it'll be impossible. The lines are, they're super long.
They're so packed, it's nuts.
Yeah. And people travel from all over to go see that guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, he also does a peach donut the same way that he does a strawberry.
Yes, just like the strawberry,
he does a peach glaze, and it's fresh peaches.
Yeah.
And then all his other donuts, they're still traditional donuts, but they're like on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, they're giant.
I used to have a donut shop that I used to go to all the time when I was working in Beverly Hills. I used to start work at 6 o'clock, you know, so I'd be driving in. And I'd stop at this donut place that I don't know if it's even still there. It was called Scotty's Donuts. I doubt the same owner is there. There was this Asian guy that ran it. So obviously he wasn't Scotty. But in fact, I think his name was...
they're all run by Asian guys.
Sam. I think he went by Sam. But a great
guy. Even the donut shop by my house is run by an Asian guy.
He had a buttermilk bar.
Yeah.
That he put in the batter, he would put this blueberry puree. So it made a blueberry buttermilk bar.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was so good. It was just, oh.
There's a place by my house that does those, but they're
really?
They're just cake donuts. They're not bars, but there was a place in La Habra, I can't remember the name, and that's what they were known for, were their blueberry donuts. And they would open something like at 5 in the morning, and if you went there at 4:30 in the morning, their cars were lined up in their parking lot waiting for them to open to get those donuts, because they would be hot, right? Mm-hmm. And
that's how it was when I was.
They would sell out by 5 or 6. They would be all gone. Wow. There would be no.
There's a place,
and they don't make
any
more because they're just so busy.
Yeah.
You know? So you had to go in and get them early. But then there's a place by my house now. Actually, the one that's just right around the corner for me, they make them, and they're pretty damn awesome.
Well, they used to, when I would come in there, I started out, I would always get a twist, just because a hot twist is one of the best.
Are you going to make a drink called a hot twist?
You never have. And he had some really good tiger tails. It just had the cinnamon in it, you know, the traditional way. Not like
Shit,
a donut
I'm stopping
man,
by Donut Man on the way home.
That's awesome. I've had the tiger tail that just, that's really good. But he would have all of his fillings there in these things that looked like they looked like caulking guns.
Yeah.
He'd have them all lined up, and he'd have all the donuts that were going to be flavored or filled with something there, setting out cooling on the rack, and so I could pick whatever I wanted to be put in them.
Hmm.
And he would do that right up to the point until they started getting chilled, and after they were cold, he'd fill the rest of them and just let it go at that, because apparently after that it didn't work very well. But
so let me ask you this.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about Krispy Kreme donuts?
They're really small.
Right.
They're okay.
So
I mean, if you go in when they're hot and everything, and they've got the sign
blaring
outside.
They're great when they're hot. They melt in your mouth.
Yeah.
The first time that I had them, I thought they were amazing. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I even had them the first time was that Huell Howser did an episode on Krispy Kreme.
Mm-hmm.
And the night that episode aired, I remember thinking, and I said to my wife, this is my first wife, she's like, yeah, let's go get some. And we went down to the closest Krispy Kreme to us, and there was a line that was probably a mile long. And it was after that episode aired, so everybody went out to go get some. And then they grew after that, right?
Yeah.
Because back then there was really...
There were like three.
Yeah, yeah.
In LA County.
And then they started becoming everywhere. But now, like, it's... The trend is not the small donut. The trend is the unusual donut, right? Like I said, the ones with the cereal and the ones with the marshmallows and the almonds and the bacon and whatever else that they put on the tops of these donuts.
Yeah.
Krispy Kreme still does have a good donut.
Yeah.
They do still taste good, but shoot, man, like a... I could clear like half a box, right? Because they're so small,
mm-hmm.
right? And the key to a Krispy Kreme donut is to get them while they're hot,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're no longer a destination donut to me.
No.
And they used to be.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
They used to be, but that was because it was new to me. So like when I saw it on Huell Howser, I thought, oh, I got to get one of those. And then it became one of those destination donut places, but it no longer is to me.
When I was a kid, you know, the Winchell's donuts were the donuts that were all around in this area. And they had good donuts. They weren't, you know, knock you over, oh my God, this is incredible. But they were good, and they weren't silly small. When I went to one years later in the 80s, when I was living in South Pasadena, and I walked over to where there was a Winchell's donut down the street, and I'm looking at these donuts, and it's like these little things. It's like, what the hell is that? What is that?
Do you think that they started making them smaller, or do you think that your perspective changed?
You know, that's a really good question, and I've thought about it. I think they did start making them smaller. I really do. I think they didn't want to raise the price too much. And so to keep within the same price area that they were to begin with.
You use less material. They just started
making them just a little bit smaller.
Now, do you remember when the fancy donut was the jelly donut?
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, that was like, That was the bar of gold in the pink box was the jelly, right?
Yeah.
Everything was a cake. Mm-hmm. You might have a chocolate bar in there. You might have
raised ones.
A maple bar. Raised were even more fancy back then. I remember the raised crumbs were even more fancy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then there was a jelly. And that one had the ding, had the glow around it, right?
Jelly.
We'd go after the, go after the jelly. It's funny how, I mean, it's still a special donut to me.
Yeah.
Maybe because of that, my
it's
childhood.
It's still good.
And it's still good.
Good.
But it's no longer the bar of gold in the box.
No.
And you know what's different for me now is, now my go-to is a chocolate old fashioned. Because you get the sweet, but I like the texture. I like the crunch.
Well, the old fashioned is that buttermilk batter,
right?
That's so good,
right?
And when it's the old fashioned donut like that, it's got so
but
much
it's
crispy
better than
edges
a,
on it.
It's better than the buttermilk because then the buttermilk gets too.
The bar gets to be too loafy.
Exactly.
You know.
That's it.
So at least to me, I don't even know if that's a word, but it's
no, you're
it's,
right. That's
it's too much like I'm eating a piece of pound
because
cake.
Because you want the crunch. Yeah,
yeah.
That's it. Too much like pound cake.
Yeah.
You want the crunch. But why do they call that an old-fashioned donut?
I don't know.
Because that's not how it was made in the old days.
No. When I was a kid, that's what my mom would get all the time, and that was a buttermilk donut. You get a buttermilk donut or you get a buttermilk bar. That's why I call it a buttermilk bar rather than just saying a buttermilk. Because that was... To me, that's what she got. She got a buttermilk donut. She loved buttermilk donuts, and that's what she was talking about, are those old-fashioned donuts.
Now, when I was a kid, I never understood what donut holes were. I mean, I knew that they were balls of donuts, right? And it wasn't until I saw a video of how they made donuts that I thought, oh, so that's the hole, because it's the hole that they punch out.
Yeah.
Right? So, but I could polish off a bag of those, too, man.
A minute.
You guys, have you ever had Cinnabon?
Oh, yeah. God.
That's a heart attack on a plate. That's another one that's...
The pecan one.
When I was in college, I worked at the mall, and I used to go over to Cinnabon in the morning and watch them make the rolls for the day.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, man.
Yeah.
All the butter and all the cinnamon that they would put in that thing. Oh,
that silky, glazy, sugary horror that's dripping all over
it. That blanket that they lay on top of it, the sugar blanket that they just... Oh my God!
It tastes like ambrosia.
Goodbye.
It's like
all right, we're gonna go on a run.
We're gonna go on a run
right now.
Gotcha. To the mall. They close at 9.
Pick up a box of Cinnabon. No, that's one of those things that I can eat one of those, and actually get through it. If I do it, like, maybe once every 3 or 4 years, I think.
What do you mean, actually get through it? I could get through it right now. I don't need 3 or 4 years to get through a Cinnabon.
You have no allergy to a Cinnabon
it's
here.
Just so, it's just so much of the sweet and everything.
There's
you're talking earlier about sucking through drinks like that.
There's never too much.
It's like, I can't go through it that fast. I can sit there and enjoy it, and you know, but at the end of it all, in some way deep down inside, I'm exhausted. I'm tapped out.
You're doing it wrong. Let's go get some, and I'll show you. I'll show you how to do it so that you don't get tapped out.
Now you know how I feel about drinks when you guys make them. So,
no, I much prefer.
Well, see, here's the thing. I have a sweet tooth.
And...
I have like a really bad sweet tooth.
Yeah.
You know, there's almost nothing. That's sweet that I don't like. I mean, it's, you know, if it's sweet, you know.
There's nothing wrong having a sweet tooth. I mean, it's just bad if you overdo it.
I know people that say that they just don't like sweets. I know people that say, yeah, I don't really like sugar or sweet stuff. So
I can't say that.
I can't say that. But I'm actually kind of jealous of them because they are skinny because they don't eat all that sugar, all those carbs, you know. And everywhere I go, you know, like if I go to dinner, no matter where it is, if they come out with a dessert tray, I can't say no. I want to have something.
Yeah.
I'll be like, yeah, what do you got? You know, you got tiramisu, and you got the creme brulee, and you got the, you know, carrot cake or whatever. Man, I like any.
I've never been a fan of carrot cake, but
oh, I love carrot
cake.
That's
just me. I think it was a trauma as a child.
Well, see, here's the thing about carrot cake. What I find interesting in carrot cake is that they've found a way to take a vegetable and make a dessert out of it.
Oh, well, now, zucchini bread I can do all day long.
Ooh. Yeah.
But there's something about carrot cake that just got me.
I got you. But you understand what I'm getting at. It's the creativity of making a dessert out of a vegetable or out of a carrot. Sure. Like if somebody gives you a carrot and they say, make a dessert out of this. Like, make a carrot cake.
Carrots are sweet. I mean, carrots are really sweet. If you use carrots like in a spaghetti sauce or something like that, you're going to taste this sweetness that comes out of those carrots. Yeah. That,
or just a simple that's why, vegetable
that's why
soup.
We're, it's just, yeah.
Well, just, yeah. Here, let's do it like this. Let's talk about, like, for example, bread pudding.
Okay.
Someone figured out how to make a dessert out of bread, out of a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I never ate the edges of the loaf. Right? No kid ever did.
Yeah.
Right? As an adult, I
didn't. I didn't mind them personally.
When I was a kid, I didn't eat them. But
I like
so
the
my grandfather,
better.
he would take all the edges of the loaves that we had in the house because we went through a lot of bread. There was a household of my grandparents when they came to from the Philippines. They lived with us for maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Until they got their own place, and my dad's sister lived there. And then it was my mom and dad, and then me and my two siblings. So that's a house of. Eight people, seven people. So we went through a lot of bread. And so he would say, he'd say, save all the loaves and I'll make bread pudding. And he made the greatest bread pudding.
That's where it came from. That's where it came from. People used to eat bread all the time. My dad used to talk about when he was a kid, and this was a long time ago, holy cow, but he was in a household with his mom and his sister and his dad, and they would go through, there was never a time there wasn't a loaf of bread on the table. And you're eating dinner, and you're eating bread while you're eating dinner. It's just what you did, and you know, grandma's making bread three, four times a week.
It's the same. It's like making a dessert out of bread. Right?
What you've got.
Yeah. Now here's an interesting piece of trivia. Did you know that bread?
Like that.
Yeah, the snap, the finger point snap.
Yes.
Finger.
That bread. Was invented because of beer.
What, the yeast?
I was just thinking that.
Bread would not exist if it weren't for beer.
Okay.
Because of the yeast.
Was it accidental?
I don't know, but I don't remember. If you listen to Stuff You Should Know, it's the podcast for HowStuffWorks.com. And listen to the episode about beer. They talk about that.
Oh.
Bread exists because people were fermenting beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it had something to do with the yeast, yeah.
Yeah.
But if not for beer, we wouldn't have bread.
Well, we wouldn't have wheat or raised dough.
But that's the thing is that, you know, when you think about like some of these weird, it has crossed my mind. You know, how did we invent bread? Who thought about that? When you think about all the steps that it takes to make a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you think about what they had before, which was basically, you know, matzah crackers or something, and you know, that was wheat and some water and, you know, a little bit of this and that to kind of bind that together, and then you put it on a flat thing and cook it, and you've got this cracker thing that is sort of like bread, but...
Tortillas of some sort.
Yeah. Well, and the unleavened, like pita bread and stuff like that. It's just, it's what they were eating before they fell upon using the yeast.
Loafed bread.
Yeah.
Before they fell upon loafed bread. Right. Right. You guys want to take a break?
We can take a break. I'll get another bottle of the Blue Curacao because I'm out. And
so let's take a break, and then when we come back...
We can try out the...
Let's do this Tandoi cocktail.
The lavender stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in Original and Anchor Hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, ground zero for tropical drinks.
And we are back.
Oh, this is delicious.
This bottle that I brought.
Yes.
This is a cocktail that was made by Tim Walters at Tandawai.
Beautiful.
Now, if you're familiar with Filipino desserts, there's a flavor that's very popular that's called ube. It's spelled U-B-E. Ube. And it's made from a purple yam.
Okay.
So what they do is they take the purple yam and they mix it with condensed milk and sugar, and they make this kind of sweet flavor out of it. And it's used to make cakes, and it's used as a donut topping, and it's used in ice cream. It's a very, very popular Filipino dessert flavor. Uh-huh. And so what Tim did was he made a cocktail out of it. And I don't know exactly, you know, how he made this drink. I don't know if it has, you know, the actual ube fruit in it. Which I guess if it's a sweet potato, is that a fruit or is that
a vegetable?
It's a vegetable.
So it's a vegetable. There we go again, talking about...
It's a tuber.
Ooh, talking about a dessert made from a vegetable, right? So...
But I like this better than carrot cake.
So enjoy, guys. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Salute.
Smells really interesting.
It
That's
does.
Cool.
It really does.
So what you're smelling there is the coconut cream.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, wow. That's great.
Right, so it's a dessert drink. It's not unlike the Milky Way that we have at Tiki Tea. It's a little bit more coconutty than the Milky Way.
This is fantastic.
But it has the same kind of flavor profile, I would say, maybe, or
ish.
The consistency. Ish.
Thank you, sir.
It has the same texture, that's for sure.
Has the same texture.
And the
But that coconut cream is really pretty forward, right? So.
Well, it's taking the place of the chocolatey flavor that's in the Milky Way.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's a good description. So it's really good.
It's like a coconut Milky Way.
It's like a coconut Milky Way. It's really good, isn't it?
It's very good.
Tim's awesome. I mean, he's been bartending for over 2 decades, and he's working as the cocktail engineer for Tandawai. And what basically that entails is he's taking their expressions and he's making drinks for them so that they can market their rum with these cocktails.
Right,
And this is one of the ones that he made up. And what he's been trying to do is follow some of the traditional flavors of the Philippines. So he's got other drinks as well that follow some of the flavors that you would be familiar with in the Philippines. And what I'll be doing in the near future is start posting all of those recipes on my Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so
awesome.
People
That'd
can start making those drinks.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to play with that.
That's what she said. I had to.
No, but that I've only got a couple of original coconut drinks, and so it'd be nice to.
Do you make your own coconut cream?
No,
you just use cocoa reel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you tried making your own?
No. You know what? I started out with. I started out just using the. I would get the dried coconut at Trader Joe's, and run it through the food processor until it's just powder.
Right.
And then I would use that.
Okay. So I make my own coconut cream.
How involved is it?
It's easy. So the reason why I started, because I was using coca reel, and I do still have coca reel. I don't know if it's real or real, but we were at the Blind Rabbit one night, and they came in with a bottle of freshly made coconut cream, and Alan had the forethought to ask to taste it by itself, so they poured it in a shot glass for us to pass around.
Oh, wow.
And it was delicious.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm never going to use the processed stuff again.
Wow.
Yeah. So I make my own. So
Well, I found the ones that I was making initially just with the powder. I made the powder.
Is it the Coco Lopez?
No, I would get dried coconut at Trader Joe's.
Oh, you're saying the one that you would make. Yeah.
That when I was using that, it was, I would have to use some, you know, simple syrup to try and
give it a
little bit of kick. And once I started using this stuff, it was, I, you know, could cut out any number of overly sweet things to make, because that would, this would overpower it anyway.
Right.
The cocoa reel.
Right. And it's easy. I mean, it's easy to get something pre-mixed, but...
Yeah. Well, no, I would rather make it. I mean, I make the...
I was going to say, I mean, it's always better when you make it fresh. Yeah. You know?
I mean, that's... I love my fashionola, and I like the other stuff that I make.
Is your fashionola recipe a secret?
Kinda.
Because I make fashionola too. So we won't talk about it online or on the show, because if it's a secret, we wanted to preserve that. But yeah, the fashionola that I make is from a recipe that was on Tiki Central.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically red raspberry smokers mixed with Hawaiian punch concentrate.
Uh-huh.
And that brings out that really tropical fruity flavor.
Right.
That fashionola is...
No, I couldn't get the
Hawaiian punch.
Hawaiian punch stuff.
It's hard to find.
So yeah. I use a couple of other things.
Yeah, yeah.
Mixed together to kind of come up with something sort of like that.
Yeah.
With the raspberry Smuckers. Mm-hmm. Actually, I haven't tried it yet, but the next batch that I make, I'm going to use the seedless. It's an all-natural brand and everything, but it is seedless, so I'm going to try that, because... The biggest pain to me is straining it and straining it and straining it to get all the seeds out.
Right.
One of those seeds just makes it bitter. And
are you talking about the raspberry Smuckers?
Yeah. So that's the only drawback for me.
Are you putting it on a stove?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too.
Yeah, I just melt it down.
And that's what I do too.
Add the liquid ingredients and let that steep for a good long time, and then strain it, and then strain it again, and then strain it again.
Strain it again over and over and over, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I will say, I've made 6 batches of Falernum in my life, and I don't think I'll ever make it again. Because it was just too much of a pain.
It's tedious. I made Falernum once, and I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
I'll just buy it.
The stuff that I got was no better than the stuff that I use. And
right.
I mean, the amount of time that it took was just ridiculous. I mean, toasting almonds now, and doing the with the grating the zest off the limes oh my god,
You make
horrendous.
Your own orgeat?
No, same reason.
I don't either.
Same reason. I was doing it and
simple syrup's easy though.
Yes,
and some of the other syrups that you know, if you're making passion fruit syrup, that's easy.
Yeah,
you're basically just adding it to simple, right?
Yeah.
You're just,
well, I do cinnamon. I do the
honey syrup, cinnamon syrup. Yeah, that's all easy. Anything that mixes with simple is easy.
I found something that claims to be Don's number 2.
Oh, really? How do they know that it's Don's number 2?
Because it's a combination of dram and vanilla and something else. And I can't really tell what else it is.
Oh, so you don't have it figured out yet?
Oh, no. No, but
I thought you did.
Here, put your finger out and I'll just do a little drop.
Well, I'm wearing gloves.
There. Ah.
You want to use my finger?
No. Sorry.
Ooh, things have switched gears really fast.
I'm sorry.
God, I don't know. Oh.
I'll taste it really slowly. And I'll look you in the eye when I do it.
Oh God!
This is your variation. This is what you think.
I didn't make this. I found this.
Oh,
what do you mean you found this?
I found a bottle of this.
Oh, I thought you found a recipe.
Mm-mm. I've seen a recipe since I got the bottle.
Okay,
can I try that too?
That's of course.
Okay. There's some here. That's interesting.
Isn't that cool?
Drink it all.
I just took a sip. I took a taste.
That's all you needed to do.
That's all they gave me.
All right.
Swear no tongue around.
No tongues. No tongues.
That's what she said.
But I really like it. I'll show you the bottle. I found it at High Life. And it was the only bottle on the shelf.
And it said Don's Mix number 2 on it?
It doesn't call it that on the front of the bottle. On the back, when you start reading it,
what's that flavor? I'm trying to nail that down the flavor.
You know what? This is when I was a kid. This is when I was a kid.
What's the flavor, Dave?
It's dram and vanilla. I'll show you the bottle before we're done here and you can look at it. But
this is really good, though.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah, it's taking me back to like, wait a minute.
That's where that came from.
What's interesting to me is that Don's Mix, for example,
usually they're talking about number 7 when they're talking about Don's Mix with the, with the cinnamon and all that.
Well, it's a cinnamon syrup with grapefruit juice, which sounds horrid.
Yes.
Right? But he made a mix out of that.
Uh-huh.
And it's obviously something that's used in his cocktails. Mm-hmm. So it's these mixes then, you know, they're these things that probably just you would never expect them to get along, right?
Well, that's like, I mean, the mixes that we've tasted at the Tiki Tea are like,
But I don't know what the ingredients are in those because obviously they're not going to tell us.
Yeah.
But they taste great, right?
But trying to figure out what the hell it is.
Although their fashionola did not taste like fashionola.
No, it didn't to me either.
Not at all.
It tasted like it had Heineken in it.
What do you think was in it?
It tasted like it had Heineken in it.
Yeah, I thought you said honey. I was going to say it tasted like it had beer in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it totally tastes like it had beer in it. I know that people that are listening are thinking beer and fashionola. Yeah. Well, that's what theirs tasted like. Now, just the fact that he poured it in a glass for us to taste it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Right? And he even let us taste the secret mix for the Rays Mystique.
For the Rays.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. He poured that in a glass for us to taste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have an idea of what I think it is. I'm not going to share that because I respect that bar and I don't want to spread that around. And then it's interesting because Tim has an idea of what he thinks it is, too, and it's different from what I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting to talk to.
Yeah, so I try to play around with that, you know. You know, as much as I'd like to know the recipe for the Rays Mystique, I'm also happy not knowing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's part of the magic of that drink, right? And if I could make it at home, I'd still rather drink it there.
Yeah, me too.
Right.
I don't have any impetus to make it at home.
Yeah, I don't have to make it at home.
I want to go there and I want
you
to
have it there.
I want to have their Rays Mystique. I want to have their Scorpion. I want to have their, you know, Lapu Lapu. I want to have their drinks. So trying to engineer anything, reverse engineer anything of theirs isn't real exciting for me.
Okay.
You know, I know that I find all kinds of recipes online and find the first time I tried to make a zombie off a recipe online, it was just ass and gasoline mixed together.
Right. Well, there are thousands of great recipes online, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, enjoying a tiki tea drink in the tiki tea is really the only way to do that for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I agree.
Although we have made some of those drinks here.
Yeah.
And I've done the same thing at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not the same as drinking it there.
Mm-mm.
So, now, what's your favorite drink at the Tiki Tea?
Oh, God. There's so many.
Have you been through the whole menu?
Yes.
Okay.
Many times.
Just like Alan. I haven't.
You haven't?
I haven't.
Wow.
No. Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised at that.
Me too, actually.
Well, I'm a creature of habit. I'm not the kind of person that has to try everything. That's part of why I'm not a drooling bastard, because I don't have to have everything on the list. Like, I've been going to Tiki Tea for over two decades, and I still haven't had everything on the menu.
See, the reason I tasted one drink, oh, God, let me try another one. Oh, so good. Okay, Let me try another one. I mean, it just getting better,
right?
And different.
Yeah.
So
that's what enthralls me.
Yeah, same here. So
is to note the differences between all of them. And when I mean, when I first started going there, when I was, you know, a kid, really, it was just challenging to do it. I mean, here's all these. I mean, at that time, I don't know how many there were, but there weren't as many as there are now.
Right.
But that was when I was doing that work at the Vista.
Yeah, tell me about that. You were telling me the other night that the Vista used to be a porn theater?
Gay porno theater.
I didn't know that.
Specifically.
I had always thought that it was this historical...
Well, it is. I mean, it was.
Miniaturized version of the Egyptian theater.
It kind of was.
Okay.
In the original plan.
And I've been told that it's pretty cool to look at in the inside. I just haven't been in there yet.
When I was working for the company that bought it... At the time that it was still a gay porno theater, and that I was in the crew that was pulling the couches and sectionals and stuff out of the back few rows, you can imagine. I don't really have to elaborate on any of that. Let's just say there were lots and lots of rubber gloves and
face masks.
A couple of pairs of jeans went in the trash. And it was really bad. I was fortunate
Catholic
enough
Church.
To
oh,
have.
I'm sorry.
I was fortunate enough to have had a job putting in shower doors and using silicone caulking. So. I had silicone all over several pairs of jeans, so the liquid just couldn't, nothing could get through
those
jeans.
Could penetrate the jeans.
Exactly. So, talking about...
So, when you were gutting this theater...
Yes.
Was it still untouched as far as...
Underneath everything?
Yeah.
I mean, it was there, it wasn't
so
very
how much
old.
Restoration did they have to go through once you pulled all the couches out?
The company I worked for... Put in new seats and put up curtains over the walls.
And that was it.
That's what they did.
And then cleaning, I would assume.
Yeah,
right?
Probably new carpet.
New carpet, yeah. So
new carpet.
That's pretty cool.
I would hope it was a new subfloor too, but that's,
yeah.
You know.
Well, so, I mean, you know, we have all these things like that. And then if you go down on Broadway on downtown LA, there are these great old theaters.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be neat to see some of them open again. A lot of them are all closed down and boarded up. And from what I understand, some of them are really, really great, really elaborate.
$1 million,
yeah,
absolutely incredible.
The million-dollar theater is pretty awesome. But what does the theater on the inside look like? I've never seen it.
It's unbelievable.
Right. But there are other theaters down there like that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think recently there was, maybe about a year ago, they had opened up a lot of those theaters to a tour that the... what is it, the Conservancy or the, you know, the...
There's some Conservancy group that's been doing that, yes.
And you could go in and you could look at them.
Right.
Right.
They've been trying to work on saving the Rialto down here in South Pasadena where I used to work. That's how I got in with the company that bought the Vista.
Yeah.
I was doing restoration work on the Rialto. But now, I guess a church has bought the Rialto, and so they're doing... church services and stuff like that, but apparently they've agreed to respect the interior space
and
keep it as dazzling as it once was. And
have you seen, is it the Herald Examiner building? What's the building that Randolph Hearst owned that's also on, I think it's on Broadway? Huell Hauser did an episode on it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically the building, so...
It was I think it was the Herald Examiner building, and... And I could be getting the name of the newspaper wrong. It was a newspaper building.
Mm-hmm.
And the lobby is as elaborate as Hearst Castle was. Because Randolph Hearst, he owned that building. And it's still there. And it's mm-hmm. untouched from what I understand. Now, the upper floors are vacant. Mm-hmm. Because when they closed down, nothing else came in its place. And apparently, it's used a lot in the movie industry for sets. They'll build their sets in there, and they'll film in there,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was pretty neat. But other than that, the building's not being used for anything else. And after watching that episode, I drove down there to go check it out. And, yeah, there it is. It's still there. Yeah, wow. Exactly the way that it is.
Looks like the Bradbury building.
No, the Bradbury building's awesome. And the thing is that last time I was there, they wouldn't let you go past. They would let you walk up to the second floor,
mm-hmm.
I think to two different balcony areas, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, but now.
Well, people were getting nuts. I mean, people were
they?
You know, climbing all over everything in there. And I mean, once when they did when they did Blade Runner, original Blade Runner, people who found out that that was the building,
right,
where they did, you know, the elevator sequences and all that, and they'd go in there and you know, it just got out of hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand them limiting how far you could go in.
Some of the buildings that I haven't been in yet, and I probably have been in there when I was a kid, was, you know where ArcLight Cinemas is? It's the Cinerama over is it Sunset or is it Hollywood Boulevard? I think it's Sunset.
It's Sunset,
right?
Yeah.
It's got that dome,
mm-hmm.
right?
Cinerama dome.
I haven't been in there.
Did you ever see a movie in Cinerama?
No, I haven't. Well, they're still showing movies there.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm glad that they're keeping that stuff around.
I don't know. Every once in a while, they will actually show a Cinerama movie. But
I'd love to see one.
It's when you look at it on TV or something else, it looks a little odd.
Well, yeah, because it's not designed for a flat screen.
Right.
It's designed for a dome ceiling.
But when you see it in there, it's incredible.
It's amazing, right?
It's unbelievable. Have you seen one in there?
No, I haven't actually.
Wow.
I'm surprised I haven't.
So the other day I went to the Batman exhibit.
How is that?
It's awesome.
It sounds cool.
They call it the Batman 66 Retrospective. It's at the old Max Factor building on Hollywood and Highland. And I'd never been to that museum before. It's the Hollywood Museum.
Yeah.
And they have all kinds of stuff in there. So I guess as the old Max Factor building, it was the place where Lucille Ball and Marilyn Monroe and a few others had dressing rooms and
mm-hmm.
makeup tables.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where their makeup artists would come in and doll them up for the movies. And the building, for the most part, is preserved in that way. So they'll have like areas where it'll say this was Lucille Ball's dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
And this was her makeup counter. And they'll have a big piece of plexi in front of it so that you couldn't touch anything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat because they also have a bunch of movie memorabilia in there. So they have Pee Wee Herman's bike, and they have, you know, clothing and props from other movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mostly clothing. You don't see a lot of props.
Yeah.
I think all that went to Planet Hollywood, but but it's mostly clothing. You know, like Men in Black, they have all the suits that they wore on mannequins in there, and other movies. And the Batman exhibit was really great because it was the Adam West Batman.
Yeah.
And Adam West and Burt Ward. It was on the top floor, or I should say the third floor, because that's as high as you could go in there. Even though there were more floors, the upper floors were roped off. And I think that the floor above it is available for rent as like a wedding space or something.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, what's cool is with the Batman exhibit, they had a lot of paraphernalia, you know, like
really?
That I totally forgot about that I actually had as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's
like
cool.
Color Forms. Do you remember Color Forms?
Yes. Oh my god. I had two of those Batman sets.
They had Batman Color Forms
and
they were complete sets still on the Color Form platforms. Right? They haven't been peeled off yet. And they had a replica of the Batphone, and they had all the costumes on mannequins that were actually used
mm-hmm.
in the TV show.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that was interesting to me was, you know, back then when they would make the Batmobile or the Bat costumes, and the Batmobile I'm going to get to because I was thinking about that also. When they would make the Bat costumes, when they would dye these costumes, the dyes back then and the fabrics were different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the dye would basically sit on top of the fabric.
Right.
And then the dye would fade. So it would turn purple, basically. The blue would turn purple.
Uh-huh.
And so they had the one of the original costumes, and it was purple. They had it on a mannequin, right? And then they also had the ones that looked like the ones that you would see in the TV show, but they were replicas because what they wanted to do is show you what it looked like.
What it really looked like.
Yeah, when they were actually taping that show.
Right.
And what was interesting is some of those fabrics are now very rare because we don't use those fabrics anymore, right? Those textiles are no longer as common as they used to be.
Right.
And so there's a whole write-up about that, right? And then going back to the Batmobile, you know, I think everybody knows the story that that was a Futura prototype that,
yes,
that was sold to George Barris for a dollar that he made the Batmobile out of, right? Right, and
I'll give you a dollar.
Right. It was neat because they had a Batmobile there and the little faux bat cave and the poles that, you know, from Bruce Wayne's manor that go down into the bat cave. And then with all of the costumes and mannequins and stuff, it was really neat to see.
Yeah. You
know? And, you know, as a kid, so Batman was 66 to 68.
Uh-huh.
And I was born in 68. So it was something that was already in reruns,
right,
when I was watching it as a kid. And as a kid, you know, I wasn't looking at Catwoman and, you know.
Oh, I know you were.
The way that I look at them now. And, oh, my gosh, they were gorgeous, man.
Yeah, they were.
And Batgirl. Oh, yeah, oh, my God, they were gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of find it interesting to see all that stuff. You know, like, it was so colorful and it was so fun, so different from what the original Batman concept was.
Yeah,
really was,
yeah,
right? They call him the Dark Knight, you know? He was this guy that really lurked in the shadows, right?
Well, he was a crazy vigilante.
And you know what's crazy to me is the TV seasons back then.
Yeah.
Like, Batman only played from 66 to 68.
Yeah.
Did you know Gilligan's Island only had, I think, like three seasons? Something
three?
Like that?
I thought it was more than that.
Was it more than that?
I thought so, but I could be wrong.
But the point that I'm getting at is that they weren't like Friends that lasted for 10 years, right?
No.
I did not know that.
Pardon my mixer.
It's all right. But of course, nowadays, a TV season could be as short as 6 episodes. But back then, a Gilligan's Island season could be 30 episodes.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nowadays, they break it down to a shorter length of time so that they could stretch it out.
Yeah, well, right? they do fewer shows, so.
Yeah, yeah. Now, on that note, like, I think you mentioned to me before, you used to live in Albuquerque, is that correct?
No, I've been to Albuquerque.
You've been to Albuquerque. What brought you there?
A girl I was going out with had lived there for a while, so we went there on a visit.
Oh, okay. What did you think of Albuquerque?
I thought it was cool. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice kind of the cool, laid back atmosphere of Tucson with better food.
Tucson with better food.
Yeah. It,
you know, it's funny that you bring up Tucson because it does have that feel of Tucson. Now, I'd never been there.
That's a Dirty Mary Ann.
Oh, Dirty Mary Ann. Thank you.
You said you wanted one.
Thank you.
I thought I'd just...
Got a new drink.
That's got even more of the fashion oil than the other one you had.
Got a new drink. Awesome. Thank you, Dave.
Ooh.
So, I've never been to Albuquerque, but I'm a big fan of the Breaking Bad television series.
Uh-huh.
Good show.
Which was
filmed... Well, we were talking about the Green Chilies.
Which was filmed
in
Albuquerque. That's how it came up. Which was filmed in Albuquerque.
Yes.
And... When I watch that show, it very much looks like Tucson to me.
It's got... I think it's just the vibe. You know what I mean? The times I've been to Tucson, I've always enjoyed the people. I've enjoyed the vibe. I think it's a great place. If it wasn't insanely hot most of the year, I would even consider moving there just because of that vibe and because of the people there. It's just really cool.
Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
Yeah. Yeah, yes. I actually once I finally got into it towards the end of the run of the show, I watched the
God,
whole thing.
Oh my God, man!
Yeah,
very good. It was like a serving of crack cocaine to me. I couldn't stop. And the way that they ended every episode, I had to watch the next one
because
I binged it on Netflix. Right?
Yeah,
and you know, like, I got so into that show, I started reading about trivia and all that stuff about the show and the actors and all that kind of stuff, and I guess initially that show was supposed to be in Riverside.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting.
But the city of Albuquerque gave them an incentive to film in Albuquerque so that they could get the revenue from the production, right?
Yeah.
And the city of Albuquerque is a character in that series.
Yeah, they are.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, it would not play the same if it was in Riverside. It was better in Albuquerque.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, because they used a lot of the desert.
I'm so surprised that when you say that, that really surprised
me. Right, well, things change, right? When they first wrote that series, they weren't probably thinking 5 years down the road as
no.
a, you know, five-season series.
Yeah.
So they didn't envision the way that Albuquerque would probably be in the movie. It was, the story was more about, you know, the chemistry teacher becoming
a drug
lord, right? And it was less about where that happened.
But as the series evolved,
right,
and the writing evolved, that just became a new whole thing. And that's one of the things I loved about the series was Albuquerque itself becoming a character.
It became a character in the series. Now, they do Breaking Bad tours of the city.
Do they really?
Yeah, they go to Walter White's house. They go to the dry cleaner or the laundromat that where the meth lab was. They go to the high school. They go to Gus Fring's house. I think that also stops at Los Pollos Hermanos. And I've said that I'd like to go do that one time. My son and I were big, you know, we're huge fans of the show. And they do these tours from an RV, from the same kind of RV
that's cool.
They were using in the series to cook the meth with, right?
That's really cool.
Yeah, and like Jesse Pinkman's house apparently is like a real popular place that people would go. Tourists will take pictures in front of it and all that kind of stuff. So,
I heard in the news, just a little bit though, I think maybe just for like a couple weeks or maybe a month, where they were serving Los Pollos, like in LA.
I went to that. So they did a pop-up where they built Los Pollos Hermanos in downtown LA. And I went with my son because we're big fans of the show.
Okay.
And we went in the middle of the week, in the middle of the day.
Uh-huh.
We stood in line only for 10 minutes because we were strategic about the time that we went out there.
Yeah.
And they rebuilt that whole restaurant. It looked like a Los Pollos Hermanos on the outside and on the inside. When you walked in, they had booths and and they had a whole menu and everything. And they were serving food.
Just saying cheers.
Oh, I thought you could give it to me. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll let you have some after I have.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, he wasn't giving that to you.
I know. Damn.
And they were serving food. So what they did was they were serving curly fries because it was a promo for season 3 and season 3 of Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
And Better Call Saul is a prequel to Breaking Bad.
Right.
And in season 3 was when they introduced Gus Fring's character Better Call Saul. So that was the whole tie-in. And it was great. So we got to eat. You know, we got a little bit. We only got the curly fries, which I was really fine with. And it was kind of pissed me off that afterwards people were doing reviews saying, oh, all you got was curly fries? They should have had chicken. And I thought, wow, like they built this whole thing. They replicated the whole restaurant. And they gave away free food. And that still wasn't good enough
Haters gotta hate.
Right? Right? But it was awesome. You know, so I posted pictures, I think, of that online on my either Facebook or Instagram or both. And what sucks is that Gus Fring and Saul Goodman didn't go to the one in LA, but they were at the one at in Austin at South by Southwest because they did the same thing. They did the same pop-up over there for South by Southwest.
Okay, yeah.
And I thought, oh, that would have been cool to meet them, but
yeah,
they weren't there.
Oh.
Yeah. This is a cook's debauchery.
Cook's debauchery?
Debauchery, yes.
Debauchery.
That's not on your menu.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is. Oh, yes. I missed that one.
Hawaiian style rum with a delicious secret.
You want to try it?
Oh, yeah.
Did you try yours?
I did. It's great. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. It's delicious.
So here's the thing. I've been low carb since the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So these drinks are hitting me pretty hard. Boo.
Low carb.
I'm going to get back on the wagon tomorrow. But tonight, I'm enjoying myself.
That's the main thing.
So I'm giving myself a 24-hour period. So like last night, when I was at TQT, I still just drank Diet Coke.
Yeah.
But I had a half a bowl of kibble. Their Chex Mix.
Yeah.
Their bar mix. And that's loaded with carbs. And
that's not that.
I gained a pound. I checked this morning.
You gained a pound?
I gained a pound.
God.
How much of that did you eat?
Just half a bowl.
You didn't eat a pound of that.
No. That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
Slap you.
If I eat an 8 ounce steak, I'm not going to gain just 8 ounces of meat, right?
No, that's
not
how it works. It's you're using bits of that, and the rest of it goes away.
Well, I gained a pound. But I thought, okay, I'm recording this podcast tonight. Cheers. All right, cheers. No, I'm going to cheers you right now. Cheers. Okay. Cheers. And since I'm still within my 24-hour period, considering like the 24-hour period my cheat day.
Yes.
I'm going to hit Donut Man on the way home.
Somehow I knew where this was going.
And then tomorrow I'm going to get back on the wagon. So I've been doing... So here's what works for me is low carb.
Yeah.
You know, throughout my life, you know, for the past 25 years.
Yeah.
I've hit the gym 5 days a week.
Wow.
And I go up and down because of my diet. That's the that's the main thing. You know, I can go to the gym and I can lift weights and I can get on the treadmill and I can go outside and I can do 3-4 miles every day. That's not a problem. Actually, it's very cathartic to me. It's very therapeutic. I'll put my headphones on and I'll get lost in my headphones. I'll listen to podcasts and things like that. But my Achilles heel is my diet. I just love, you know, rich foods, right? I just love eating, like, here's the thing about food.
It's the same reason that you like good cocktails.
Good cocktails.
You like good food.
Well, look, you know, we celebrate all of our accomplishments around food. Mm-hmm. When we go to a graduation, what do we do afterwards? We all go out to dinner, right? When we have a birthday, we celebrate with a giant cake. When we have an anniversary, we'll have a nice steak dinner, right? Mm-hmm. All of our celebrations are around food. Good food is a part of our lives, right?
Yes.
So the things, it's...
Well, it's a part of our culture.
We associate with you know, enjoyment. So, you know, over that 2+ decades, mm-hmm. I've tried all kinds of stuff to try to keep myself, you know, from being rotund. I've tried low fat. I've tried portion control.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried low carb.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the thing that works best, obviously, for me is low carb.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what works for everybody. Some people like to go vegan. Some people like to do portion control. That's what Weight Watchers is. That's what Sally Craig is. It's just portion control. You can eat whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It's just portion control. And some people like to do low fat, right? What works for me is low carb.
That works for me, too.
Really?
Yeah.
When I mean, I'm the size of a house now, but when I was the size of a city block, you know, a couple of years ago, it was the thing that made me lose that 100 and some pounds. When I lost that 100 and some pounds,
you lost 100 and some pounds.
Yeah, it was like 140 pounds.
140 pounds.
I was over 300 pounds.
That is a lot. That is way.
No, I was humongous.
You were over 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Do you have pictures of that?
Yeah, but I don't brag on them.
No, but you know, we celebrate our wins.
Yeah,
right?
No, I gained a lot of it back. That's the only problem.
You know what?
I certainly didn't gain all of it back, but I did gain some of it back. So it's kind of,
you know, a couple of years ago, I had a neighbor. He moved back where he's from, but he was a beer lover. I mean, just enjoy his beer every single time.
Yeah.
And one thing he did regret it. Well, he didn't really regret it. He's just listened to his doctor. He went to this doctor and the doctor told him, look, you messed up your liver. As of right now, you need to stop drinking now. And he listened to his doctor. He's like, okay, I'll stop drinking. And for him, it wasn't, I guess he had self-control. For him, it was easy. Mm-hmm. His doctor told him to stop drinking. He stopped drinking altogether. But he did regret not knowing about If I knew I had to go on a diet in the first place, I'd rather do that. Because I'd rather go on a special diet. I don't care what kind of diet, but something that will prevent me from stop drinking beer. But unfortunately, I didn't do that. For me, I don't want the doctor to tell me, Alan, you need to stop drinking cocktails.
Well, I'm not at the point where a doctor has told me to stop doing that. I don't want that either, believe me.
Nobody does, but...
But, well, so here's the thing. I'm going to be 50 this year, right? I don't bounce back like I used to. Before, I could eat whatever I wanted. I could drink all night long, and I could stop at Tommy Burger on the way home, have some chili fries and chili double cheeseburger. And I could still be thin with a flat stomach and a size 28 waist, right? And I did that for many years. I can't get away with that anymore. You know, like, I mean, depending on where I am with my weight and my cholesterol, sometimes I have to take medication. I'm not at the point where I have to take it all the time.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, I'm going to be 50 this year. I've been on blood pressure medication for years now.
Oh, I did not know that.
But if I bring my weight down, my blood pressure goes down too, and I actually don't have to take the medication. So
okay.
Yeah, so that's a good thing, right? So I don't wait until I'm at a point where I, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do.
Yeah.
I could look at myself, or I could feel the way my clothes fit, and I could say, okay, it's time.
Yeah.
You know, the party's over. I gotta be responsible for myself.
As soon as I feel something's wrong with my body, this is basically what I do. This is what I did. I had to do this because I had to go. I told you about I did martial arts for over 15 years, and I still do it.
What did you study?
Pencak Silat, SILAT, Silat.
Okay.
Indonesian martial arts.
Okay.
Dutch Indonesian. But one of the tests I had to go. It had to go through a lot of. Oh my god, just rolling around. Anyway, my diet was very simple, actually. Vegetable soup, no salt, no anything, just water and vegetables, boil them. Salad of any kind, use lemon as a dressing, and fruit.
Well, the thing with vegetable soup is that's low carb, right? There's no starches in there. It's probably low fat. The only thing you probably have to worry about in that is the sodium content.
True, but... Oh, okay, let's put it this way. The vegetable soup, I did put potato. You know, that has a lot of carbs.
Yeah, that has a lot of carbs.
Now, the avocado, that has a lot of calories, a lot of fat. But
the fat is good fat.
But in the potato, it's good calories, though. I mean, it's the vegetable. So, after just doing that for...
I can't eat potatoes because of the carbs.
You know what? After just eating those three things at any way I want, my body became so lightweight. So I just became so light. And my martial arts actually improved because of that simple thing.
Are you still practicing?
I teach.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I teach to my nephews.
Okay, are you teaching out of a studio or just teaching
out of
your
own? No, I'm out of my backyard. No, okay. No.
Because when I was in high school, I started when I was young. I was also a martial artist. And
yes, I remember. You told me. Yes.
Yeah, and I started teaching when I was probably about maybe 17 years old. I started teaching. It was part of my black belt credential.
Okay.
I had to be, I had to put in a certain number of hours as an instructor.
Okay.
So that I could get my black belt. So I never sweat so much in my life as a martial artist, right? Mm. When we would work out at the studio, we would have pretty intense workouts,
and
after that was I didn't even get into my whole, you know, health kick, you know, lifting weights and my cardio and all that until I was really in my mid-20s. And that's when I was like Mr. 24-hour fitness. Back then it was Family Fitness, you know, because that was before Family Fitness emerged with 24-hour Nautilus. So
right, I was taking that class down at the Sierra Madre Recreational Center, and this guy would have us stand there with our legs as far apart as we could get them,
right?
Just with our hands at our sides, you know, up like we're gonna punch somebody.
Yeah, he'd
walk out of the room, and we'd have to stand there for like 20-30 minutes, and then he'd come back in, and after that he'd have us lay down on the floor and lift our head up and look at our toes. With just your head. You couldn't lift your shoulders off the floor. You had to just hold your head up just enough so that you could see your toes there and not lift your toes up off the, not lift your feet up. And he would leave us do that for about 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And dear God, I'd come out of there just beat to hell. And I'm 18, 19. I mean, I'm like, you know.
I used to be able to slide my feet apart and do the splits all the way down.
I never could do the splits, but
yeah. And then I would also be able to, while I was in that position, like lean all the way forward and stretch my arms forward.
Oh my God!
And put my forehead down to the carpet.
Holy crap!
And I used to be like so limber, and it wasn't just because of my youth. A lot of it had to do with that. It just took time to stretch your muscles,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would stretch and you would stretch and you would stretch, and I did that. It took years for me to get there, probably 2 years to get there.
Yeah.
But if I turned sideways to do a side kick, I could do a side kick basically at 12 o'clock because I was that limber.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would, as of right now, I never did that. As of right now, I will never have my nephews throw a high kick. The reason for that is because just getting your balls cut up. So the highest kick we ever out will allow is up to your hip.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but that's a low. That's a low kick.
Yeah, that's it. There's no reason to go up in the head.
Oh,
up in
I
the
always
chest
kick
area.
To the head. We always kick to the head. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, we would never. We won't do that. We will not do that. That was just no. Because your leg will get caught and your balls will get. Oh,
I remember my girlfriend at the time. I used to play around with her, and I'd throw a side kick over her head.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And then she'd blink her eyes and twitch, and she'd be like, "Stop doing that." But yeah, man. I mean, like those were the days. I mean. You know what's great about it is it's all muscle memory, right? So
yeah.
You remember
yeah.
all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Repetitious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all repetition. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the time, this was the 80s, and the whole ninja movie thing was real popular in the 80s.
Yes.
Do you remember that? Revenge of the Ninja, American
yes.
Ninja.
Yes.
You know, and then Bloodsport
yeah.
with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Bruce
and,
Lee.
Well, Bruce Lee was 70s, but,
yeah, but
the 80s
still.
Was all Chuck Norris movies.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Man, it was my religion.
Yep.
That was what I did.
Yep.
Wow.
You know, I remember, do you remember the movie The Last Dragon?
Mm-hmm.
It was a Berry Gordy movie, and it had Shona and Bruce Leroy and Vanity.
Who's the master?
Shona. Yeah, exactly.
Shona.
Vanity was,
hell yeah.
Vanity was the sexy female lead in that. And I remember watching that in the movie theaters, and I watched it with a bunch of guys from our karate studio. You know, there was like maybe three or four of us, and we were so pumped after that movie was over that we went to the karate studio to train. And it was like 1 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, let's go to the studio and train. And we went to the studio, and we were punching the heavy bag, and we were doing all kinds of stuff. You know, we were just so pumped up from that movie. And Revenge of the Ninja and Enter the Ninja with Shokasugi. That was a great series. Shokasugi was actually an instructor at at one of the schools that I was practicing at. And, you know, he had become this star, right? Because back then in the 80s and 90s, everybody wanted to be in the movies if you were training.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, what else are you going to do with your martial arts skills? You're going to just open another karate school?
Yeah.
Right? They all wanted to be movie people. They all wanted to be stuntmen and that kind of stuff. But, you know, that was a fad. That's not happening anymore. There's nobody doing, like, you know, ninja movies in the 2000s, you know. But, yeah, but The Last Dragon, wasn't that great?
Awesome.
Yeah. It was awesome, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but every time I...
Kitschy movie, but it's a movie that is... It's highly quotable, and you could never, ever remake that movie or make a sequel to it. It's a one-of-a-kind thing.
It's a standalone thing. Yeah.
And most of the guys in that movie have died already.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Julius J. Carey, who played Shonuff, he's gone.
Oh.
Richie, who was Bruce Leroy's younger brother, he's gone.
Oh.
Vanity's gone.
Oh.
The only one that's left is Bruce Leroy. right?
Oh, damn.
And maybe Eddie Arcadian. I don't know if he's still
alive. I don't know.
You know, but
oh my god.
But so well, they couldn't really like they couldn't make a sequel. If they're going to use the same character or the same actors, I should say, they couldn't make a sequel or remake the movie, and they will just never capture that magic again.
Yeah.
It was the '80s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vanity was like she was Laura Charles, and she was this. She hosted this video TV show. Do you remember that? They had like MTV back in the day, right? And VH1 and. And MV3, which was a TV show that Richard Blade used to host with, I think, the girl from Berlin, Terry Nunn.
Yeah.
Was that...
God, I was in love with her.
Oh, wasn't she hot?
Oh, dear God. I tell you what, I opened for them...
Berlin or for...
Yeah, for
really?
Berlin. Yeah. 5 years ago. And she looks better now than she did then.
Well, that's the thing. Some of these people,
holy
like,
cow,
the way that they age... There was this video of... Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta.
Uh-huh.
He jumped on stage at a concert that she was singing at.
Mm-hmm.
She was like in her 60s, and she was still hot, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I talked to Terry Nunn, and you know, it I'm saying,
right?
my knees are like water, and I'm just standing there for going, you guys are really good. It's like, oh my God, what a dork.
Well, in the 80s, she did that song, Sex.
Yes.
And that song holds up today.
Yes, it does. So a lot of their stuff does.
My son, he's in college now, but a few years ago, that song came on the radio or on my iPod or something,
mm-hmm.
and the way that it starts, right, with the synth and all that stuff, mm-hmm. and the electronic drums. He was like, "Dad, what song is this?" And I said, "Oh yeah, this is from like 1982. This is an old song. This is from a band called Berlin." And then I thought, "Well, you shouldn't be listening to this," because he was like 13 or 14 at this time.
Yeah, that's when you change it to Riding on the Metro, because this is the same
thing,
and there's no sex.
But I was playing it in my car.
Yeah.
And I have like a kind of a nice stereo in my car. I've got a Bose system.
Nice.
And it was just thumping, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, you know, like this is some good stuff.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Oh, it
like
is.
The 80s, a lot of people say, oh, 80s music. No. But here's the thing. I know I'm a little bit younger than you, Dave, but... I went to junior high from 80 to 82. I went to high school from 82 to 86. And then I was in college from 86 till like 90, 91, right? So those are my formative years. I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
And my son even says to me, "Dad, what was it like growing up in the 80s? And I said, "Dude, it was awesome."
Yeah.
Right? The music took a turn in the 80s.
Yes, it did.
Right?
It took a couple of turns.
Yes.
Because you had a lot of stuff that came out of the late 70s. That went this way and that way and the other way.
And
we're all going at the same time.
Yes.
Punk.
You had punk in the
80s. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then it was the birth of hip-hop.
Yes.
And then
and you had the whole new wave thing.
The whole new wave, the British invasion.
Yeah.
And the fashion and the movies. So at that time, that's when all the John Hughes movies came out, right?
Yeah.
So you had 16 Candles, Breakfast Club.
Goonies or...
No, not Goonies, but Weird Science.
Yes.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. These were all 80s movies, right?
Yes.
This is all part of my youth. And those movies are classic movies today, right? Everybody can quote a line out of 16 Candles. Everyone can quote a line out of Ferris Bueller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would not think that you could, but you can. Give me a line out of Ferris Bueller.
Oh, my God.
You still here? Go home.
Right. 16 Candles. What's a happening, hot stuff? No more Yankee my wanky. The donger needs food. Right? Right? Everybody knows those lines. Right? So, the 80s were a great time to grow up, you know?
Yeah.
Even though we were in the Cold War with Russia and you know.
Things were real tense.
Things were tense.
But there were a lot of things. I mean, the you think about those Genesis videos with all the puppets, making fun of all the world leaders, you know, arguing back and forth with what is it, Land of Destruction?
I just remember turning MTV on, and just letting
singing
it,
music
and just letting it play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And seeing, so like if I named videos to you, if I named Greg Kinn Jeopardy video, yeah. What's in the video?
Oh God.
In the end there was a girl with they were at the altar and she was dressed as a bride but she was a skeleton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? If I name the Duran Duran Rio video.
Oh yeah, with that chick. Dear God.
Well, you know, you're thinking of Hungry Like the Wolf.
Yeah.
Duran Duran Rio was the one where they were on the yacht or the sailboat.
Yeah, they were on the boat.
But that's the thing, if I name the Michael Jackson Thriller video. Right? Everybody can picture what these videos played, right? Because this was the 80s.
It was supposed to be a marketing technique. It was supposed to help them do record sales.
Right.
And while it did help a little bit, it never really took off, and that's why MTV doesn't play music videos anymore, because it was too expensive. You think of all these bands, geez, think about those Whitesnake videos.
Right.
Dear God, the money they spend on these things is crazy. The Duran Duran ones were nuts, the amount of money they spent on those things.
The Whitesnake video with Tawny Kitaen rolling around on the hood of a Jaguar.
Well, that was his girlfriend at the time, so I don't think they didn't have to pay.
But that's
her,
consummate 80s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, very much so. But, you know, it turned out that they weren't getting all these record sales anymore because now they had DVDs and you could just sort of copy a DVD really easy onto another one. And it's just like, well, okay. So, you know, they stopped spending the money on that kind of stuff. People sit there and look at, oh, God, I wish MTV would actually show music videos and everything. It'd be really cool. There just aren't any to show.
I know part of why they changed their programming was that they couldn't make money showing videos.
Well,
it had something to do with the advertising dollars that they just weren't able to do the advertising dollars or get the advertising dollars that they needed to keep the station running. So they started doing those stupid shows like Remote Control and Real World and you know, all that stupid stuff. And
the Young Ones.
You know, the irony is that it's still called MTV.
Yes.
And they don't really show any music on there, you know. But, I mean, that's a part of history, right? Like, look at Motorola phones. Do you know why Motorola is called Motorola?
No, I don't.
So, I'm a fan of stupid trivia, so that's why I know this stupid stuff. But Motorola came from the days when the Victrola is what we played records with. And so Motorola was founded when they basically tried to do, their first product was a record player in a car. So they took the Victrola and they put it in a car and they called it a Motorola.
You know, I've seen
Motorola.
Those. Yeah. I've seen those.
Now they're known for cell phones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
well, they went from that to doing the cellular phones in the car that had the big pack in the trunk.
Yeah. Yeah,
I had bosses whose cars I was driving that I had to go have those things serviced. They'd have a little handset.
Yeah. And I find all this kind of stuff interesting. Like, if you look at BMW, you know the BMW logo. Imagine that. Picture that in your head.
Okay.
Do you know what it looks like?
Shield.
It's a circle. With a plus.
Yes.
And then it has a blue.
Blue, white, blue, white, right.
When BMW first started, Bavarian Motor Works, they were manufacturing not cars, not motorcycles, but airplanes. So what you are looking at is a propeller.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah. That logo is a propeller, and that's on the hood of every car that they make.
Yeah.
Right?
So or on they were making motorcycles for a long time, too.
They were making motorcycles,
that's right.
too. So the point that I'm getting at is that that's part of their history, right?
Yeah.
They look back and they say, that's an interesting thing
now,
when you look at that logo.
Was that during the time of World War One, or was that World War II?
I don't know.
Because that would be interesting. I'd be curious about
we
that.
We could Google
as
that.
To, as
we could
to
Google
when
that.
they were doing
but that's,
that.
But that's one of the interesting things about MTV. Why do they call it MTV when they don't play any music? Well, they call it MTV because in the beginning, they played music videos, right?
But in the beginning, that's all they played.
Right. And
that was when they had VJs.
Exactly. Now, I do this podcast called Inside the Desert Oasis Room. And a lot of the times I'm not inside the Desert Oasis Room. Tonight I am inside the Maka Lanai.
Yes.
And
cool. Well, you're outside.
I'm outside. But that's part of the history of the show. Like, why do you call it Inside the Desert Oasis Room when you're never inside the Desert Oasis Room? Well, because when it started, it was inside. It was inside the Desert Oasis Room.
And you still do.
And I still do. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but because of where it's located, it's sometimes easier for me to go to my guest.
I think it's awesome that you travel all over the place. I think it's great.
Well,
I really enjoyed your one at the Reef with the guys.
Thank you.
That made me want to go there.
Oh, really?
And check
have you
it
been
out.
There before?
No.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
There's a lot of history there.
I really want to go there and check it out. And who? What was the bartender's name? Brandon?
Brandon.
Yeah.
Shout out to Brandon. Brandon Glass, shout out. He's the main guy over there.
I'd really love to bend an elbow with him a couple times. And
well, we should go.
Yeah.
You should tell me when you want to do that and we should go. Because you're on the road a lot. You are always in a different city every day.
That's true.
And what's the farthest that you've driven?
Oh, with this job or just in general?
Well, no, with this job. Just
with this
for
job.
Work.
And
then I want to know the farthest you've driven.
Visalia.
Oh, Visalia's not that far.
It's pretty far, but... But that's with this job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my son and I did the road trip up to Seattle.
I've driven to Seattle before.
And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Do it again.
but then I love to drive. I really enjoy driving.
I enjoy driving too.
I enjoy driving in new places. And I would much rather, you know, like instead of going up the 5, I'd much rather go up the 101 or
take the
99
scenic route.
Because the 5 is just nothing.
When I was in my younger years, I would drive just to drive.
Oh, me too.
Just because I wanted to see where this road took me.
Yeah.
And it's therapeutic.
Yeah, I think so.
I would drive up into the mountains.
That's why I drive for Lyft. The longest I've been was to San Diego Airport. I picked up two guys, drove to San Diego Airport.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they end up over here. Do not say. But yeah, that was a 2-hour drive.
Yeah.
Good chunk of change, I tell you that.
Oh yeah, I bet. I mean, you know, it's nice getting on the road and just seeing where does this go. Oh, this street turns into blah blah blah. And
I used to intentionally get lost.
Yeah.
When I first got my license, I was so hell bent on getting out of the house. From the time I was 15 and a half when I had my license,
right?
You know,
ditto.
I was driving. As much as I could. I was going anywhere. I would just drive and drive and drive and then try and figure out how to get back home.
Is Seattle the farthest you've driven?
No. No, I've driven to Ball Harbor, Florida.
You're kidding me.
Mm-mm.
From California.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take the 10?
Yeah.
What was that drive like?
Long, tedious.
I know that.
Texas is really, really, really big.
A lot of times, I know.
And I've driven through Texas a few times.
A lot of times, Tiki Diablo would drive from California to Florida for Hukilau.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it out of necessity because he would have a car full of merch.
Yeah.
So he couldn't load up a plane, right? So he'd put it in the car and he'd just work his way across the country.
I'd like to try one of the upper ones. I'd like to try, you know, like the 40. And go
farther
across
the 40.
Where does the 40 go? The 40 comes out of...
I've taken the 40 to Laughlin, but that's as far as I've gone.
Yeah, well, that's where it goes through and just keeps...
Yeah. I've never gone past Laughlin on the 40.
So I'd like to check that out, because I haven't either.
Okay.
I'll just go and see what...
Wow.
Let's see where this goes.
What we should do is we should set up like a Route 66 trip.
That'd be fun.
And we should take that to Chicago or something.
That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, that would.
We should set that up.
We could... There's you talk about Route 66, and the first thing that comes to mind is there's a little stretch of the 66 that's off of the freeway when you're going when you're coming up in the Grand Canyon in northern Arizona. There's the Grand Canyon Caverns in there, which is one
I've
of
I've never
those,
been to Grand Canyon.
You've never been to the Grand Canyon?
No. I've never been to Niagara Falls either.
I haven't been to Niagara Falls, but the Grand Canyon.
Well, look, I'm not dropping my job with you not being to Niagara Falls.
Yeah, Grand Canyon's a lot more accessible.
I'm not being to every place in the world or every place in the United States.
The Grand Canyon isn't that far. You're talking about Visalia not being that far. Well, the Grand Canyon's only 8-9 hours away.
An 8-9 hour drive. I suppose it's not that as far as it seems, but that's pretty far drive. Like, if I drive from here to Northern Cal and I go to the Bay Area, that's about a 5.5 to 6 hour drive.
Yeah.
So to go another couple of hours, I don't know.
By the way, this berry drink is excellent.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Mike Bansuelo swears by them.
Now, I've been told if you go to the Grand Canyon, there are parts of the canyon where you can actually just walk right up to the edge.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you do the glass bridge on there?
No, that's not in the Grand Canyon proper. That's a little bit farther west. It's an Indian reservation. And
so they built that for people to come out to that? Yeah.
Yes.
Have you done the glass slide in downtown L.A.?
Nope.
Would you do it?
I don't know.
I would do it.
I don't know. I've got just enough of a fear of heights that I might force myself to do it. I don't know.
The only thing that's held me back from doing it is that I've heard it's kind of expensive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've heard it's, and you know, people are going to correct me, but if you want to go out to the area where they do the slide just to get up to that part, it was something like $20. And then you got to pay like another, I don't know what it is, but you got to pay another fee to do the slide. So if you want to go up to the observation deck, there's an observation deck where
it's. Is there a bar in the observation
deck? I have no idea. Well, yeah, it's a great question.
That would make a difference.
That would make a difference, right?
So if I'm spending $20 to get up there, they better have a drink for me that I can buy before I get on the $20 glass slide.
Well, because here's the thing, right? It's. Have we heard any reports of anybody falling out of it?
No, I don't think you can.
And it's been open for like a year, right?
Yeah.
So it's...
I mean, I so long as they mop it regularly.
I think that it's as safe as anything else, right? That they could build just for a thrill, right?
Yeah.
Like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And why not, man? What are you doing next Wednesday?
Oh, dear Lord.
Before we go to Tiki T. I'm not kidding. So with that, we should probably end on like a positive note. I want to get some Donut Man.
Oh, Jesus. That does sound so good, though.
We should make a trek. It's either going to be Donut Man or Cinnabon.
Oh, dear.
I don't care. Both.
Or both.
Both.
Or both. Is it? Am
when
I still within?
Both.
I'm still within my 24-hour cheat day, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, before we wrap up, I want to say thank you, Dave, for hosting this episode of Inside the Desert Oasis Room.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you for opening your bar to us. Thank you for mixing us a bunch of these drinks.
Yeah, they're so
I don't even know
awesome.
How many I've had. Do you?
Three?
No.
Okay, there's one, two, yeah, three.
What about this one?
Yeah, that's this one.
That's that
it's
one.
It's part of three, okay.
So, berry.
Maybe this is just hitting me hard because I was doing low carb.
And little grass shack. So that's three.
I had a Dirty Mary Ann.
Yes.
I had a Dirty Ginger.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
Oh, what was the other one?
A sand pan.
Oh, I had a sand pan. No, but you told me, this is the dirty blah, blah, blah.
That's the Dirty Mary Ann.
Well, no, but
no, you wanted the sampan because it had the fashionola.
Okay.
Yes.
And then
you made
Dirty
Mary Ann.
Dirty Mary Ann has more, and you had this one.
And I had that.
So we all had three.
What was in this?
You had four.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
You had four. You totally had four.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. It was
and then I drank something.
Berry.
I had a little something of yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I did have four.
Right now, everybody's like, I don't care. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout-out, check us out on Facebook at our Inside the Desert Oasis Room group page or find us on Instagram at Polynesian Pop.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you again.
I love you.
Thank you again, Dave and Alan. And
love
if you guys are in the LA area, come hang out with us at Tiki T. We're there every Wednesday.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Right. We're part of the Wednesday Wino crew.
That's church.
Church. Church.
That's all right. Church.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Cheers.
Salute. Church. Salute.
Cheers and aloha.